This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we continue feasting on the Apocalypse, the book of Revelation, with more of the seven letters of Jesus to the churches, this time to Smyrna, to Pergamum, to Thyatira, to Sardis, and to Philadelphia. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
The LGBTQ policy agenda has promised repeatedly to bring equality. They see an inequity. They say, we need to do this. We need to allow this. We need to change the way we think and talk about basic human existence, like the binary sexuality. And the end will be equality. Has it delivered on that promise? Well, our guest for the next few minutes, Joy Pullman, says that that policy agenda has been a massive bait and switch. Joining us to discuss children and the LGBTQ policy agenda, Joy Pullman, executive editor of The Federalist and author of the book, The Education Invasion. Joy, welcome back.
Hi there, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about your recent experience with your local 4-H club.
Oh, well, I got this email, of course, once my kids signed up for kind of some 4-H programming recently. Of course, you always get on everybody's email lists. And so the email this time was inviting my kids to join a local 4-H camp. But when I read it, not only did the person sending the notification put his pronouns in his email bio, kind of like the registration form for kids, asked for their gender, I think, and also gender identity. And so, you know, kind of looking at that, I was thinking, what's going on here? And so I emailed them, you know, to really check, am I right that, you know, this local organization that I actually participated in as a kid, I was a rural kid who showed ponies and flowers and my artwork in 4-H. So I have a lot of, you know, wonderful memories of being involved with them. You know, is this organization that I know is among flyover country Americans, people who do not share these values, is it really planning to potentially put boys and girls together in vulnerable situations where, you know, possible nudity and so on and so forth? Is this really the case? Is this really what's happening in 2022? So I emailed them and basically, you know, they confirmed the children basically are going, and as well as possibly the counselors will be at that local camp, room together according to whatever gender identity they put on their form when they register, which of course means that my 10-year-old daughter could be ending up rooming with a male counselor or fellow camper. And it's not just, you know, the potential for rooming together and my poor daughter, I mean, I would never do this to her, so she's not going to go, but the idea that my daughter might be dressing next to someone of the opposite sex, but also the whole idea of the fact that this sort of normalizing of these gender falsehoods really requires talking about prurient adult things with children. If you're talking about, oh, wait, how could there be two men being married, but they can't make a baby? You know, even my 3-year-old knows it takes a mommy and a daddy to make a baby. So in order to really explain how that works, you have to start talking about sex with little kids. And that's not good for the kids. It's not developmentally appropriate. It's not emotionally appropriate. And, you know, I just want my kids to have a happy childhood. And a happy childhood does not include talking about sexual details before kids are ready. And obviously their bodies signal when they are starting to be ready around puberty, which none of my kids see yet.
Where else are our children encountering what you call self-righteous LGBTQ activism?
Oh, I mean, it's practically everywhere. So, I mean, starting a couple years ago, I started to be unable to take my kids to the local public library. I mean, not just among all of the stacks in the library are books that if and when my kids pull them out, there's, you know, again, it's straight up just handing pornography potentially to my 3-year-old child. The library puts on very open displays right at children's eye level of these pornography and, you know, false sexual information books. And just having them there with your kids. I talk about my kids about everything that comes up in their lives, what they're seeing, you know, look, the giraffe has a very long purple tongue, la, 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 right? So, oh, mommy, you know, what does this picture mean on this book? That is forcing conversations with children that are totally inappropriate and damaging to them, you know, so I no longer really can take my kids to the local public library. I mean, I just, anytime I kind of break any of these guidelines I've imposed on myself, I get in trouble. I brought my 10-year-old daughter to the library the other day because I happened to be going, you know, when she was in the car with me, you know, and she started, you know, pulling these books off the shelves that I thought, oh my gosh, let's get her out of here as soon as possible. Because again, I mean, I remember having a wonderful childhood. We never talked about this when we were kids. We weren't even thinking about anything sexual, prepubescent. And it was great. It was great. And I really resent that that's not no longer possible for 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old children.
You say that the LGBTQ policy agenda is a massive bait and switch. What do you mean by that, Joy?
I was alive and around and paying attention during all of the years where the so-called gay marriage was forced into the public discussion. And then I remember we were given all these sob stories. I also have compassion for. I mean, I have family members and friends who have these concerns about, what if my partner's in the hospital? What if we have a life or death situation? Why would you ban me, you know, from being with someone, so on and so forth? We were just straight up told, this doesn't affect your straight marriage at all. This doesn't affect your straight kids. This is just about, you know, really, you know, providing special law for special minority exceptions. It won't affect anybody. Well, that was obviously a lie. Like we are not even 10 years out from the various Supreme Court decisions that are forced basically all of our laws to start ignoring the reality of sexual differences. And where, again, I cannot bring my children to public places. They cannot go to public camps. Or, I mean, and 4-H is technically a private organization, but it gets a lot of public funding. And it's not even just necessarily about the policies. It's, you know, all the other kids who have cell phones and watch TV are hearing about gender identity when they're 3 years old in their Blue's Clues videos. So that really is the bait and switch. Was we were told that we have to be really careful for gay, you know, people, which nobody objects to being kind and polite and loving to anyone, regardless of the sins that they indulge in. But that's not what we're talking about here. What we really are talking about here is whether the government should recognize sex differences between people, which is right there in the gay so-called marriage debate, because the idea of gay marriage assumes that men and women are not different, right? That it doesn't matter. There's no difference between a male-male couple and a male-female couple. Well, there's an obvious difference. One of those is a, you know, a heterosexual coupling of different sexes, and the other one discards the woman or the man. Anyway, we were told that this was just about empathy for people, which nobody disagrees with. But what we really were given is what people were called bigots for foreseeing at the time, which is that once you stop admitting and recognizing us in law and society that men and women are different and those differences really matter, then you're going to have so many kind of knock on cultural, it's an entire cultural sea change. And you really can't have both at the same time. You either have to acknowledge that men and women are different and that that matters, and that the only union that produces children and protects them and provides the lowest risk environment for them should be protected and preferenced by the state. Or you have to say, we refuse to acknowledge that men and women are different, and we basically are going to, you know, live with all of the consequences of making society hostile to children as a result.
Has the LGBTQ agenda delivered on the promised equality it was supposed to produce all over our society?
No, we haven't actually gotten equality out of all of these. I mean, the bait and switch promise of equality. What we've actually got is even worse inequality. And that really pushed again on the most vulnerable people who, despite all the press and propaganda, it's really children. And there's been kind of a wordplay here, because the idea of equality, of everyone believes that all men, meaning all humankind, are created equal and endowed by their creator with inalienable rights, right? That's promised in our Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution secures those equal rights for all people. So, you know, equal rights before the law is not the same thing as sameness. Men and women are equal before the law, but also, you know, there's instances in which our differences that are sexual actually matter, and that does matter often in law fundamentally with your marriage laws, with your family laws, with your family policy. And so all of these things are, it makes perfect sense that we would be basically thrusting abrasiveness, thrusting emotional disconnection and confusion upon women and children who are the most vulnerable in a society. And that's not called equality. That's called putting the false idea about the sexes at the pinnacle of society and forcing everybody else to just deal with the true and real fallout that comes as a result of that.
What has the U.S. Department of Education announced recently regarding federal funds for school lunches?
Well, this is very interesting. The U.S. Department of Education and U.S. Department of Agriculture really kind of quietly recently said that they are going to start treating federal discrimination provisions as if they include gender identity. So it's kind of complicated legally, but what they're basically saying, what they are saying is, we're going to pretend that the law says that you're breaking the law if you treat males and females as different in any entity that receives federal food subsidies. So this is the SNAP, the food stamps benefits. So as well as the other kind of large piece of those federal food subsidies is for school lunches. And it's not lunches anymore. It's breakfast, lunch, snack, and often over summer feedings. So this is not just almost every public school in the country, but it's also many private schools. They participate in the federal school lunch program. It basically just subsidizes getting federally required and or approved food to kids who are designated as lower income. So all of those entities, according to the U.S. Department of Education and of Agriculture, now have to treat boys as girls. So put boys in girls' bathrooms, use false pronouns to describe people who have gender dysphoria, all the rest of it, if they want to continue getting federal funds for school lunches. There's an exception there. The only exception that is written into the federal law that the Biden administration is pretending allows for this. That's another subject. But written into that law is an exception for religious institutions. They have a waiver and they don't even need to basically send any paperwork in to get that. They just are presumed to have one. So only religious institutions, so basically Christian school, Catholic parochial school, those are the only entities now that if they take federal food subsidies, they are allowed to continue treating boys and girls as different everywhere else in their schools.
You have mentioned the Biden administration's deliberate misreading of this law. What role does that 2020 Supreme Court decision, Bostock v. Clayton County, play in all of this?
Well, that decision, technically, the very narrow majority there decided by the Trump-appointed Neil Gorsuch, the majority opinion says that their decision to interpret federal non-discrimination law related to employment only applied to employment. So that case was about a man who wanted to dress as a woman while he was working in a funeral home. And so that case only, you know, the judges ruling, the justices in that narrow majority said, you know, we're only talking about if you have a man who wants to live as a woman and you're an employer who is a large company, you have to let him do that. But we're not talking about anything else. Well, of course, no one is surprised by the fact that 2 years later, the Biden administration is claiming that the Supreme Court decision, what it essentially did was give them the legal rationale and a fig leaf to take what the Supreme Court tried to claim was only going to apply to employment law and put it in everywhere else that the federal government gets its sticky fingers. So the Biden administration is not only ignoring the Supreme Court's decision that it's citing, but it's also using the reasoning that Justice Gorsuch used in that to basically use federal Title IX is supposed to advance girls in sports and other areas of education. And now it's being used by the Biden administration to erase women, to erase women's prerogatives and protections and basically, you know, make them live. If anyone, you know, decides that he needs to live as a woman and join, you know, women in their bathrooms and locker rooms at school, the Biden administration wants to help that. Well, actually, I don't consider that helping the child. I think that is actually bad for everybody involved. But the Biden administration wants to use that child to essentially, you know, make schools, frankly, breeding grounds for gender dysphoria, for increasing confusion, kids' sexual confusion. And the end goal of that really is it destroys children's understanding of themselves and the relationship between themselves and their parents. And, you know, when people are atomized and frightened, they tend to, you know, vote for bigger government. So that's what the Biden administration kind of is getting out of all of this, destabilizing children's childhoods, increases social chaos, and that leads to, you know, calls for a bigger authoritarian government.
Finally, with about a minute here, is the Biden policy likely to be challenged legally?
Well, it's already being challenged. And actually, so the Biden administration did another kind of little trick that's becoming increasingly common. They basically told all the schools through press releases, oh, you have to do this, get in line, long before they issued the federal regulation that actually is, you know, would be theoretically binding. Federal regulations have to go through lots of months of notice and comment and so forth. And that hasn't even come out yet, but the Biden administration is telling schools, you know, get on board. Well, also not filing that regulation yet kind of reduces and delays the ability to sue the regulation and to provide notices and comments on the federal record that object to these regulations. And so it's pretty patently a delay game so that, you know, in the meantime, while all of this is working out in courts, which takes years to take place, America's children, the majority of which go to public schools, are going to be, you know, living within increasingly chaotic social environments in their public schools. Unless parents and school boards stand up and say, you know, look, until all of this court stuff works out, we're not going to implement these questionable federal regulations. But, you know, as we've seen over the past 2 years, courage for doing those sorts of things is unfortunately in very limited capacity. So that means many millions of American kids are going to be only subjected to worse education environments in the years to come.
Joy Pullman is executive editor of The Federalist and author of the book, The Education Invasion. You can read her columns at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Joy, thanks.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute will be with us after the break to talk about House Majority Leader Nancy Pelosi being denied communion by her archbishop in San Francisco. Issues Etc. guests are frequent contributors to the Lutheran Witness magazine. The Lutheran Witness is a must-have resource for every Issues Etc. listener. You can receive an annual print and digital subscription for less than $20. Learn more at cph.org/witness or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Interpreting the world from a Lutheran perspective, the Lutheran Witness magazine. cph.org/witness or 1-800-325-3040.
With the oldest deaconess program of the LCMS, Concordia University Chicago has fully certified young women for the deaconess vocation for more than 40 years. I'm Deaconess Kristen Wasilak, Program Director for Deaconess Studies. Help us identify the next generation of servants to care for souls, engage our communities in mercy, and teach God's Word. Learn more about Concordia Chicago's deaconess program today at cuchicago.edu. cuchicago.edu.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Logia Journal, the Confessional Dogmatic Series. The works of Kurt Marquardt and many other resources are all brought to you by Luther Academy. Did you know that during this time of COVID-19, your purchases and donations help Luther Academy supply these same resources to pastors around the world? Please consider helping us with this important need through your prayers and financial support. Learn how you can help by visiting lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com.